This is an ABC Radio National podcast. For full details, abc.net.au/rn.
Hi, welcome to All in the Mind on ABC Radio National. I'm Lynn Malcolm, and today, the puzzle and pain of the fragmented mind.
Silence, blissful silence of the mind. The few seconds upon awakening where I forget, where I am at peace. All night tormented by hideous nightmares, all day living one. My brain was once my best friend, so witty, so clever and bright. Now my brain lies to me, and like a fool I believe what it tells me is real. No one is to be trusted. Everyone hates me. Everyone is conspiring against me. The illness becomes like a jealous lover. It separates me from my friends and family. It doesn't allow me to work. There is just me and it in its twisted world. No escape. Except for those few seconds in the morning upon awakening.
Angela, whose poignant poem, Wake, captures her experience of living with schizophrenia. 1 in 100 people in Australia will develop this biological disease of the brain called schizophrenia. It usually strikes in early adulthood, and most often people have it for life. A life burdened by emotional pain, stigma, and severe disability. 30% of people with schizophrenia attempt suicide, and 5% succeed. But the illness is still a puzzle to the medical profession. It's likely to be caused by a complex interplay of many genes and environmental factors, and researchers all around the world are intensively trying to unravel this mystery, hoping for a more effective treatment, or better still, prevention. Today, we'll hear about some initiatives by the independent Australian research body, the Neuroscience Institute of Schizophrenia and Allied Disorders. Professor Vaughan Carr is the scientific director of NISAD, and he explains one of the symptoms of schizophrenia, which epitomises the terrifying reality of the disease, psychosis.
Psychosis is a general term for a person whose experience is such that they are out of touch with reality. And the hallmarks are delusions and hallucinations. Delusions are fixed false beliefs that nobody else shares, such as believing that one is being spied upon or followed about and there's a conspiracy to harm the person, for example. Hallucinations are perceptions that occur in the absence of corresponding stimuli. In other words, the person hears voices when there's actually nobody around speaking to them, or they may have visual hallucinations as well, in which they see things that other people don't see. So they're the two key things. There is also a communication disturbance. The person's thinking and speech can become disorganized and incoherent, and their behaviour also can become strange, peculiar, inexplicable, disorganised.
Vaughan Carr. 30-year-old Angela became schizophrenic when she was 21, while she was studying at university. We sat in the Botanic Gardens while she told me her moving story of how schizophrenia and her paranoid psychosis tore her life apart.
I started to withdraw from people. I just had feelings that something wasn't quite right, like grew suspicious of people. You know, my personal hygiene suffered, like I didn't look after myself as well. My uni work really suffered. I flunked out of uni that year because I found it difficult even to string a sentence together, let alone write an assignment.
And when did you have your first psychotic episode, and what was that like?
I just went for a walk with some friends and there was a helicopter flying overhead, and I just started to think that the helicopter was spying on me because it was really strange. It was like hovering all around. It must have been looking for something or whatever, and I just started to think that it was spying on me. And then one of my friends I was with started goofing around, as we do, and he was pretending the tie he was wearing was a noose choking him. And I just started to think, like, that's one of the first paranoid thoughts that went through my head when I saw that was, oh, he's indicating to me that they're watching and waiting for me to do something wrong and I will hang myself with a mistake.
It's been very frightening.
Yeah, yeah. And it all went downhill from then. So with the paranoia and developing the symptoms, so it started off as a conspiracy with my uni friends, and then it was the lecturing staff, like my faculty, and then the whole university, and then my family, and then strangers in the street. And I left Queensland and I moved down to Melbourne for a while, and it followed me there. It's like, it's all of Australia now. And I thought about leaving the country, and I'm going, but what if I leave the country? And then I find out it's the whole world. And then I started realizing that my favorite TV shows, which were created all around the world, were also designed to get at me. And then I'm going, oh, so it is the whole world. The whole world is conspiring against me. Every single comment that was made to me was twisted into something very negative and attacking towards me. So when I first became psychotic, I cried for 3 days straight. And during the 3.5 years that I was psychotic, I think I cried every day. I don't cry anymore because I've just become numb to anything that isn't as extreme as all of those emotions that I was feeling then. I think I cried a lifetime's worth of tears in those 3.5 years.
And Angela remained in that psychotic state until she was treated, nearly 4 years later. Now, she's one of the lucky ones who finds that medication enables her to live a relatively normal life. Schizophrenia is a biological disease of the brain. So how much is known about what goes wrong physically? Vaughan Carr.
We're beginning to understand that schizophrenia very likely involves an abnormality in connectivity within the brain. That is, the way in which the different parts are connected with each other. In particular, the frontal lobes, the temporal lobes that sit just over the ear, and some deeper structures, there are connections between these three particular regions, and current thinking is that there is some degree of disconnect or a wiring problem, if you like, that account for the loss of function, that account for the delusions and hallucinations, and also account for the cognitive or subtle intellectual impairment that is an important characteristic of schizophrenia.
Schizophrenia often has an onset when people are young, adolescents or young adulthood. What happens in the brain at that time?
Well, I wish we knew. The problem of schizophrenia, we think, is a problem of the development of the brain. The brain develops during the early stages of pregnancy by a migration of neurons from around a central tube. They migrate to precise locations, they send out branches and connect with each other, and those connections are consolidated later in life during childhood with learning and experience and so on. And then in adolescence, there are so many connections that, in fact, there are more than are needed in the adult brain, and so there's a massive pruning back. Now, we think that schizophrenia probably involves an abnormality in any one of those processes that I've described in the development of the brain at a time when there is a fine-tuning of the nervous system being undertaken, in which very possibly there is either too much pruning or the pruning unmasks faulty connections that were laid down during earlier development. And that is probably why the condition comes on typically in adolescence or early adulthood, during that period of fine-tuning of the brain development that occurs at that age.
The researchers at NISAD have their work cut out for them in their attempts to unravel the causes of schizophrenia. With the genetics revolution, hopes were high that a single gene would be found to explain it all, but it wasn't to be. So far, they have identified 8 or 10 genes which are likely to make one susceptible, and virtually all of them are involved in the development of the nervous system. But genes are only part of the story. Vaughan Carr.
The genetics are particularly strong. It's believed that schizophrenia is probably 80% heritable. But if you look at identical twins, one of whom has schizophrenia, the chances of the other one having schizophrenia are only about 45-50%. So there is plenty of room for environmental factors. And quite a number have been identified, but each of them has relatively small effects. So we're probably looking at an accumulation of things. Risk factors include such things as poor nutrition during pregnancy, infections such as rubella and other viral infections, problems with labour and delivery, babies who are underweight at birth or have small head circumference, mothers who have problems with preeclampsia or diabetes, complications at the delivery such as requiring forceps and prolonged labour and so on. All of those are early risk factors that have been identified, increase the likelihood of developing schizophrenia by about two to threefold. And then in childhood, stressful life events, head injuries, brain infections are important, and then in adolescence, further psychosocial stress and very possibly cannabis use. There's increasing evidence now that cannabis is one of the causal factors in relation to schizophrenia and very likely doubles or trebles the risk of developing schizophrenia if used early in adolescence in high quantities.
And it's the relationship between heavy cannabis use and schizophrenia which has got psychiatrist and researcher Martin Cohen intrigued. In his clinical practice in Newcastle, New South Wales, he noticed high rates of cannabis use amongst schizophrenics and that those patients using cannabis tended to have a worse prognosis. He's now conducting studies on brain function and development to further investigate the link. The healthy brain has its own cannabinoid system, which is involved in the brain's development, and it regulates its chemical systems, particularly the dopamine system. So, what happens to the brain when you smoke cannabis?
That's a fascinating question. In essence, it seems that the active ingredient, delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol, actually triggers off the brain's dopamine systems to release more dopamine in two parts of the brain. One is in that reward contingency part of the brain, which controls addictive behaviour and reinforcing behaviour, and another part of the brain, which goes to the frontal cortex, the thinking part of the brain. That's called the part of the brain that's actually responsible for attention, concentration and working memory. When people get stoned, what actually happens is that you get dopamine, this chemical, flooding out into these deep brain structures and parts of the frontal brain, and that actually shifts the way that the brain actually uses information. And so when people are stoned, they get altered time sense, impairments in attention and concentration, and also in memory. It's got some other really interesting functions in that it actually changes the way certain chemical systems interact or control memory in an area of the brain called the hippocampus, which is a deep brain structure, and that's a part of the brain that's responsible for storing memories and memory retrieval. And it seems that cannabis actually changes the way that the hippocampus retrieves information and stores information. So there's quite a range of actions of smoked cannabis.
Okay, so more specifically, what are the similarities between the state of your brain when you're stoned and the state of your brain when you have schizophrenia?
What we know in schizophrenia is that if you give people dopamine-blocking agents, in other words, agents that reverse the action of dopamine, you can actually ameliorate psychotic symptoms such as hallucinations and delusions. One of the core theories of schizophrenia is that this dopamine system is overactive in a particular brain region called the mesolimbic brain region. When people smoke cannabis, you get an outpouring of dopamine in this mesolimbic area, and it can actually produce psychotic symptoms, even in people without schizophrenia. And it seems that overall, if you smoke cannabis, you about double your risk or triple your risk, depending on which study you look at, of experiencing psychotic symptoms.
But if you have a genetic predisposition to developing schizophrenia, smoking cannabis not only increases your risk of psychosis, but it doubles your risk of developing schizophrenia itself. And even more concerning, It seems that smoking marijuana these days is actually more risky than it used to be. The product is stronger because of the hydroponic methods used to grow it. But Martin Cohen says that the strength of the cannabis is not the only issue. It's the higher concentration of the ingredient Delta-9 THC which adds to the risk.
It's actually the relationship between the psychoactive constituent, Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, and another component in cannabis, which is called cannabidiol. It seems that people who are smoking cannabis 30 or 40 years ago were smoking a completely different product, in that the balance between this cannabidiol and Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol were fairly similar. Modern strains of cannabis actually have a greatly increased concentration of Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol. Now, it's this Delta-9 THC which actually produces the outflow of neurochemicals in the brain, which can lead to the onset of these psychotic symptoms. And so, whilst the strength is important, it's actually the balance of chemicals in the cannabis that is actually changed and is of concern to people who are smoking cannabis nowadays.
So it really does sound like the risk is far greater.
Yes, there's a definite increased risk of developing psychotic symptoms from smoking the hydroponic cannabis produced nowadays as to what was smoked 15, 20, 30 years ago.
So you're mentioning that there's a fairly high incidence of people with schizophrenia that use cannabis. Why are they attracted to using it?
That's an interesting and complex question. And I think that there are people with schizophrenia who use cannabis who actually get some relief from the drug. In other words, it has some anxiety-reducing effects. The difficulty with cannabis is that the less desirable effects start probably 12 to 24 hours after you get that euphoric relaxation. And you can understand that people who have schizophrenia might be anxious, might be hearing voices, and this really increases their propensity to use a drug that will actually produce some very short-term relief. And they get in the cycle of essentially chasing the euphoria to a point where their medication is actually counteracted by the effects of cannabis and they have a full relapse.
Dr. Martin Cohen of the Hunter Medical Research Institute in Newcastle, New South Wales. I'm Lynne Malcolm with All in the Mind on ABC Radio National, Radio Australia and via podcast, and we're exploring schizophrenia. Angela was taken over by delusions of paranoia when she was 21.
You know, I saw various counsellors on and off and didn't see anyone regularly because I'd, like, you know, get the feedback that they were against me and I wouldn't do it. But it eventually got to the stage where I was just so exhausted. I couldn't stand my life anymore. And it was either accept the recommendation that I needed to go on medication, which I thought was just part of the conspiracy and they wanted to medicate me for their own designs and that sort of stuff. I either accept that medication really would help me, or I could continue living the way I was, which I could not stand anymore, and I'd just have to take my own life. So it was either try medication, see whether for some unknown reason it would work, or I'd take my own life. So I went on medication, and a month later I was fine, and I've been fine ever since.
So have you experienced any side effects from the medication?
Yeah, there's a lot of side effects to the medication, but it's better than being psychotic and I'm able to live a relatively normal life. One of the side effects that I have not been able to combat is weight gain. Like, I was a size 8 before I went on medication and now I'm a size 16 and I'm not happy about that. But yeah, the lethargy and my mind is dulled. I don't notice it now because I've been on medication for so long. People think I'm really intelligent now, but I was really, really sharp and I thought really, really clearly before I went on medication. I was just, you know, and when I went on medication, I noticed that I was a little slower. I was a little more clouded. But that's not a commonly reported side effect, so I don't know whether I'm just overly sensitive to that.
Do you know what triggered your schizophrenia?
My aunt had schizophrenia, and there's just a lot of mental illness on my father's side of the family in general. So my aunt had it. I was living on campus. I was in a stressful environment. I was studying full-time. And I recreationally, like, not heavily or anything, just occasionally smoked a bit of pot. And that was enough.
Angela. Researchers are learning more and more about the risk factors associated with schizophrenia. Dr. Vaughan Carr explains rather surprisingly that living in an urban environment or being an immigrant may be contributing factors.
The higher the level of urbanicity, varying, for example, from small towns through large towns to regional cities to large capital cities, there's an increase in the rates of development of psychotic disorders, schizophrenia in particular, as that degree of urbanicity increases. There has also been demonstrated an association between likelihood of developing schizophrenia and immigration. Recent immigrants to a new country have, amongst their offspring, higher rates of schizophrenia, and that increases even further in the second generation. We don't understand that phenomenon at all well, but it may have to do with the extent to which recent immigrants to a country may be in relatively small enclaves and relatively isolated from the rest of the community, or not as connected to and socially bound to the community within which they find themselves.
It seems, though, that the common thing between those two risk factors, living in a more urban environment and being an immigrant, would involve more stress. Is stress the common factor there?
Well, it's certainly stressful, but stressful in what way? That's the important question. This is a particular social stress, I think, of belongingness, of social connectedness, of being in relationship to others. And it may be that people with schizophrenia are particularly sensitive to that kind of stress.
Vaughan Carr. The search for more clues about schizophrenia has taken Professor Loris Charl from the University of Newcastle into the lab to study animal models. Because it's known that physical or sensory experience is crucial in determining the way the brain develops, she decided to investigate what happens if sensory stimulation to the body is reduced. To do this, she treated newborn rats with a chemical which greatly reduced their sensitivity to pain. They were kept in safe conditions throughout their lives, and their behaviour and brains were monitored.
They're a little bit behaviourally abnormal when they are young adolescent sort of age rats, and then when they become adult, we had a look at their brains, and their brains are actually a little bit smaller. And interestingly enough, in relation to schizophrenia, is that the neurons within the brain were closer together. Now, this indicates that the number of branches between the neurons is probably less. And this is a finding that's also been found in post-mortem human brain from people who've had bad schizophrenia, that the neurons are closer together, and this has been proposed to be due to the fact that they haven't got as many branches to each other. The interconnections are not as adequate as in normal people.
So what are the implications that you might be able to draw from this for human beings?
I think probably the most important thing that we have shown is the enormously powerful effect that the sensory system does have on brain development. If it does hold up, then it does go a completely new direction for research, and also could mean new treatments, because it is possible to overcome the reduced sensory input. For example, if a baby could be found genetically to have something wrong with their sensory nervous system, then you could increase that by increased touch sensation. You could massage them. You could increase other sensory inputs that may well help brain development.
What we're looking at is not so much in the older way of thinking about things, early influences in childhood have some sort of a psychological effect on how you are later in life, but now we're thinking about earlier physical influences having a physical effect on the brain.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think this is where the novelty of the hypothesis, and it gives us some directions to search for, because schizophrenia has been a puzzle for a very long time. And despite an enormous research effort, which is increasing, I might say, within Australia, it seems to be multi-gene, it's environmental, maybe you have to have the right genetic background for these environmental insults to have an effect, which makes it very complex to study. And whilst we're working on animal model at a very simple biological level, we are very cognizant of the fact that there may be no such thing as a full animal model of schizophrenia, because the tragedy of schizophrenia is that it affects the higher function centres, the very things that make us human. So therefore, we can't ever really look into the psyche of a rat, for example. We can look at much lower order functions, but it does at least shed some light so that we've got some directions to go on within humans.
Loris Charl, Conjoint Professor of Experimental Pharmacology at the University of Newcastle in New South Wales. Meanwhile, Angela is lucky that the medication she's taking for her schizophrenia is allowing her to leave the nightmare of her illness behind her for the time being and to get on with her life. I asked her whether she feels some sense of achievement.
Yeah. Since I've recently found a job. Like, it took me ages to get a career that I was happy with. Having no relevant job history for years, it took a long time to build up a job history that enabled me to get a job that I was happy with. And now that I have a job that I'm happy with and I'm saving up a deposit, and I'll be able to buy a house soon. And when I first became well again, people were saying, oh, I don't think you should even move to Brisbane to finish your degree. You mightn't be able to cope with that. And no one ever imagined that I was going to be able to have the life that I have now. No one who knew me then thought that that was possible for me. And to have this fabulous life now where I have a fabulous boyfriend and I have a career that is great by anyone's standards, and to enjoy life as much as what I do and to be as happy as what I am, I always hoped I would have that. And I've had to fight bloody hard to get there. And people are going, I don't know how you've managed to keep doing this. They're going, I'm amazed by your determination. Anyone else would have given up. And I'm going, well, I've never given up hope. If I just give up and accept it, it's like, what's the point of that? I won't be happy with that. So there were times where it was just so hard, and I thought, am I ever going to get there? Am I ever going to reach that stage where I'm going, well, I finally got my life back? And it's only recently where I've gone, oh my God, I'm finally there. It's happened. All that work, 5-6 years, finally I've done it.
Thanks to Angela, who hopes that her contribution will encourage further research into schizophrenia so that others may be relieved of this devastating illness. Thanks also to the research organisation NISAD. The music you're hearing is played by David Helfgott, who's struggled with mental illness. Production today by Sherry DeLeese, Pauline Newman and sound engineer Jenny Parsonage. Don't forget to visit our website at abc.net.au/rn and scroll down the program list for All in the Mind. There you'll find more information and audio files of our programs for you to download. I'm Lynne Malcolm. Join me next week on All in the Mind for part two of Fragmented Minds, when we hear about ways to support and improve the quality of life for people suffering from schizophrenia. Bye for now.
ABC Radio National. More than 60 programs, more than 260 transmitters Australia-wide. And we're live on the net as well as media on demand streams. Find out how to get more out of Radio National. Go to abc.net.au/rn. And for the full list of MP3 and podcast programs, abc.net.au/rn/podcast.